available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com. I don't know why we're in question form, but it's the 24/7 site that covers USC. And we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Sure, we didn't get a full slate of games in week one. Sure, we waited 10 and a half months for football, but we got some. We got a little taste. It's sort of like you went to the methadone clinic. You didn't quite get your fix on your crank or whatever, but you got a little fix. And now we're going to get us through to week two. We got six more games scheduled. And as of now, it looks like they're going to be played. But it's Wednesday, so who knows what's going to happen. That's a weird intro, Dave. I don't know why I went there.
No, I think I succeeded. I think that's what happened, is that my intro was so bad. Like, so bad that you were just like, I don't know where to go from here, and I'm just going to go for it. But you're right. We got a little bit of football as a treat. Was it a lot? No. Was it very good? Also, no. But we got some, and that's the important thing.
We got a little some, and we're going to get hopefully a little some more this weekend. So what we're going to do today, we got to talk about the games that were canceled. We got to talk about the whole environment. Dave and I had a nice little Twitter argument there that some people followed that was pretty fun. So we'll talk about all that kind of stuff, where the games stand as of now. We got to recap all the games that we did see, the four games, and then preview the week two games. So six games on the slate. We'll unveil our power rankings. We got to talk about the suicide pool, where that went, and the picks. Dave won again. Dave won week one, 3. He was 3-1. I was 2-2. I was looking pretty good, but we'll get into all that kind of stuff. If you want to contact us, send us an email. We got your questions to get to, too. A lot to get to today, man. It's a busy show. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com, or you could call or text us at 424-532-0678. Tweet us at Pac-12podcast. There was a lot of tweeting over the weekend and back and forth. At least it was on that Twitter account, even though Dave and I were tweeting from our own personal accounts. The website is Pac-12podcast.com, and the Reddit page, I tried to post some stuff there last week, so hopefully you guys can get on Podcast of Champions. And as always, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out. And I think we do have a new 5-star on the Apple Podcasting app now, Dave.
We do indeed. It's from Dally Joe Bowley Bob. It's a 5-star rating. Well, it's a podcast. Miss the glory days of Jake Browning bashing, but they do say words into a microphone in a digitally recorded fashion. So it's hard to argue that this is not a podcast. 5 stars. I mean, that's pretty much my assessment of our show. I too miss the glory days of the Jake Browning bashing, but I have to acknowledge that this is in fact a podcast. We record it over the internet and play it. It's not live radio. It's provably, I think, at this point, though I've had my doubts in the past, not like a schizophrenic nightmare I'm having. Like, you are another entity. We've been in a room together. There are photos memorializing this. So I think it's a podcast. I think it's a recording that we put out on the internet that between, I don't know, 2 and 7 people listen to.
Yeah. Well, we do appreciate that review because it was 5 stars, followed the rules, and it was funny, and it takes little shots at us, which is great. Well, that's what we love. Those are their favorite ones. 5 stars, take some shots at us.
Absolutely. That's what we want. More of that.
So, Dave, this was a really weird weekend, obviously, and things happened late. So on Thursday, you find out California, Washington, you know, one of the better games, certainly over the weekend, two of the Pac-12 North contenders was going to be canceled. And that was rough. That was like, oh, really? But then Friday morning, we find out, and this is Friday morning, like, we've other conferences are announcing these things earlier in the week. The Pac-12 Friday morning, Arizona is getting ready for their road trip to Utah. The equipment truck is already there. They're like getting out of their special teams meeting and getting ready to go onto the plane. And they find out, yeah, that game's canceled too. Utah's got a lot of guys that are positive tests. Apparently Utah's hit pretty hard with the rota right now. So two of the six games, one third of the games, Dave, were canceled. It's rough. And late in the week, tough too. So, I mean, certainly we previewed them and everything, but they didn't happen. There's obviously no place to make those up unless they're going to use the week seven for that. But man, that's a, that was a little bit of a gut punch that you thought the daily testing, everything would keep the Pac-12 sort of clean for its 6 or 7 week schedule. And that was completely debunked week one.
Yeah, and that was the theory, right? When we were talking about the Pac-12 actually having handled this better, we were saying, or at least I was saying, that one way that they could show that they handled this better was basically play a clean season, you know, have essentially no cancellations because of this testing program. And I mean, some of it is the state of the pandemic versus when all the other leagues were starting their seasons. You know, things had kind of crested and then dropped down in basically the end part of September and early October. So a lot of these leagues were able to get off relatively unblemished. I mean, there were cancellations and postponements, but nothing on the order of losing whatever it was, a third of the games in a particular league in the first week. But if you're looking nationally right now, this is the story basically everywhere. The SEC this coming weekend is down, I think, four games now of their seven.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, it's timing. It's unfortunate timing, but the Pac-12 starting their season in early November, while the state of the, you know, the pandemic is at its worst point since, you know, that middle part of the summer, if not, you know, since April. So I think it's just the reality of the situation. And the testing, no matter how much you test, if there's a certain number of guys who have it, and they've been around a certain number of guys who don't have it, you still have to do the contact tracing and everything. The interesting one, the one that's drawing a lot of consternation, I know from Wilner on Twitter, is Cal, because apparently it's one guy who maybe had it. And then essentially the city of Berkeley and their public health department is not really bothering to even deal with Cal and its own contact tracing or quarantining restrictions or whatever. And Berkeley's basically dictating to Cal what they can and cannot do. So it's making, I think, Cal probably feel a little bit frustrated because they have all these protocols in place that aren't, you know, necessarily being respected by Berkeley or the public health department, which, like, I get it on like a very basic level, like these football men and their football plans have created this football, you know, way of dealing with COVID. But at the other end, like, again, pandemic's at its worst state in many months. The city of Berkeley, the public health department in that city, and the state at large and the country at large, they have other priorities besides the football men playing their football season. So I get it from both angles, but you got to side with the public health here, unless, of course, you're Ryan Abraham. Then you've got to add some more consternation.
I'm very public healthy involved, and you know, I like John Wilner. He agrees with me. And here's the thing, and we got
that was for the LSAT for the ones who are studying the LSAT. That was an appeal to authority. Ryan worked in there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's our authoritative figure on this podcast. Like all
yeah,
of our
and that's, that was yeah. Me. This is a justification of the appeal to authority.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's not justification.
Please.
This is called a decimation of your argument. So
No. So this is a logical fallacy.
There is one.
We're doing fallacy watch right now.
In the country that is doing this, and it's Berkeley, and it's unfortunate, and Cal could potentially move. So what happened? Like Utah makes sense, right?
So
they had a whole bunch of positive cases. Well, hold on, Dave.
One quick point. We don't know that Berkeley is the only one operating this way because Cal's is the one that's in this kind of minor gray area. If Utah's were in that minor gray area, we could do a like-to-like analysis as to what's going on, but they're not. They've got multiple positive cases. So we don't know that Berkeley is necessarily being much stricter than everyone else. All we know is that Cal's outbreak is in that gray area where it could go one way or the other.
Well, we do know that you know, Clemson had not only a positive case, but they had a player.
Are you
on
comparing?
The road.
Are you comparing what's going on in California?
I'm telling you that,
to what's going on in South Carolina.
You're saying you can't compare what Berkeley's doing. I'm saying
there
are many
the
other places
within the
where,
footprint. Within the footprint.
Okay, we don't know within the footprint.
Within the footprint, my good man.
I'm talking about nationally, where this college football has been played for months now. We saw Trevor Lawrence not only travel to South Bend, was on the freaking sidelines wearing a mask. Like, that is, it shouldn't even be the same sport as what Berkeley's trying to do.
If all of your college football team friends were to jump off a bridge, Ryan, would your college football team then be required to jump off that bridge?
If every college football team did and the one didn't, then I would say, why is that team not jumping off the bridge? Like, it's probably fun. There's water down below.
That explains a lot. Honestly, that explains a ton about you.
Yeah. I mean, I like jumping. I like jumping off things.
Well, especially when all your friends are doing it.
Definitely when all my friends are doing it. They're getting paid a lot of money to do it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to do that. I'm not going to say, well, I'm not going to do it because... Well, here's the thing. So for Utah, like I said, makes
you're
sense.
You're not going to... No, follow that to its logical finish of that statement. I'm not going to do that because it's significantly less safe than what I could be doing.
No,
that would be the finish of that sentence. Just anyway, continue, please.
If everybody's doing it, it seems pretty safe, right?
So everybody doing it is why cases have risen from an average of like 30,000 cases.
College football is not why cases have risen. College football is not
the reason. Why, but everyone just doing whatever the hell they want and everyone deciding to.
We're not talking about everyone doing it. We're talking about college football.
But the college football season is everybody writ small.
You got your monologue. So let me talk about my thing. So Utah makes sense to me because there was multiple cases. And you're going to drop below thresholds. And, okay, you got a whole bunch of guys that tested positive on the team. That's on you. You know, like, they're doing daily testing. There's something that, you know, was it Halloween weekend? Whatever it was. The problem, and this is, you know, Cal's not releasing this. This is according to multiple sources. John Wilner reported it. Cal Bonagora reported it. There was one defensive lineman who tested positive, was asymptomatic, and is quarantined. And according to the reports I read today from Wilner and Kyle, and they were all going through this stuff, essentially what the city said was, okay, we're not even looking at, they didn't know what kind of contact that player had with the other people. They basically said, anyone that hit the position he plays with, they're going to go to quarantine for 2 weeks. There was no flexibility there. They didn't go through, look at all of the protocols that Cal had put in. And that's the whole point. Like, if someone on your team catches it and a whole bunch of people go into quarantine just because that's the way you got to do it, then there really isn't a point of playing college football. And I know that's what you say, and that's fine, but you've made the decision to go forward. The Pac-12, I think, failed by not having their own protocols. So I think that's part of the issue here is that they're allowing the local health officials to make and Berkeley has been the most strict, at least that we've seen. We haven't seen anything like that. And I thought John Wilner asked a really good question to the Berkeley health official. If I'm in contact with someone and you put me in quarantine and I get tested every day for 13 days and I'm negative every single day, do I have to be quarantined the 14th day? And they're like, yes. And it's obviously just an arbitrary number. But he did, and I think I talked about this a little bit when you were not on the show. It was a solo show. The point of the cheap antigen test is it's not going to be as sensitive as the PCR test. It's quicker, but the when the virus is being transmitted, it's in that range of when the antigen test is going to show positive or negative. So as the viral load grows up, right in the very beginning, if you get a PCR test, that'll be positive, where the very beginning, the antigen test might be negative. But according to the graphics that, you know, John Wilner is tweeting out and what I've seen with the CVC, it's more of the virus can't be transmitted quite yet. But by the time the antigen test would click over and say, okay, you have enough viral load that it will show positive, now you can be a transmitter. So testing that daily is what the whole point was. You're supposed to be able to reduce or even eliminate contact tracing. And what the city of Berkeley is doing is not basically just putting it like, you're just like Joe Blow in his house. You test positive, everyone in your house got to go into quarantine, instead of taking to account like, here's all the procedures we put into place why you wouldn't have to do that. So I want the health. I don't want the college football to be played and endanger the general public. And I feel like all of the testing and everything that's been done was doing a good job of trying to prevent that as much as they could while you're taking some risk by playing college football. Yeah. So I just felt that Berkeley's being way too strict.
Nothing you're saying is wrong except for that last point. And I think the important thing to remember is that they have a different set of priorities. And I would also there are unknowns still here. What is the relationship between the Berkeley Public Health Department and the football program or Cal generally? Do they think, and here's one of my complications with all of this stuff at the NFL level, at the MLB level, at NBA, less so, but at college football as well. These programs are often not honest about friggin' anything related to injuries, people being out, so on and so forth. We didn't find out until after the game that Washington State was down 32 guys because of most likely quarantine, contact tracing, etc. What, for my money, what the Berkeley Public Health Department might be thinking is, well, we're not going to take your word for it. We're not going to take your word for it on these positive tests, these tests that we are not personally administering. We're going to have to obey our own protocols. And maybe that's a distinct difference between that public health department and the Salt Lake City one or the Los Angeles one and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't be shocked if that's part of what's going on here. And then the second thing is college football is very important to us and it's very important to people watching it. And it's very important to these programs. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not very important. And it's certainly not very important to, you know, the broad citizenry of the different states. So they have a different set of priorities, and I get all that. And then I get what you're saying about the testing, that it was intended to do a better job of preventing just this sort of situation from happening. But does it do a perfect job? No, it probably doesn't. And if all things being equal, I mean, I don't think the public health department of Berkeley or wherever, why allow a college football season to go on, or why allow this particular game to happen? What is their incentive to do so if there is additional risk in playing that game, if there is additional risk in continuing forward when they know that there is at least one positive case on that team? I get that you think they're being too strict, but I don't think there is a great argument for that. Relative to other college football, like, entities, yes. So like the Tuscaloosa Public Health Department, if there is such a thing, maybe Berkeley is being more strict than that, but that's not what they're trying to judge relative to. They're judging relative to the Public Health Department of Stanislaus and, you know, Richmond or whatever. So they have to kind of follow along with what everyone else is doing in their actual jurisdiction. So I get it. Like, I get that, you know, from a Cal perspective, from a Pac-12 perspective, they feel like we've done a lot. I would say the one missing piece here, and this is something we called out at the beginning, there was a real lack of kind of building the groundwork of having a great relationship with, I think, the states and the different public health agencies in these districts, because, you know, I think the Pac-12 was really late to understanding that, oh, wow, we might actually have a season, so we need to get going on this. We called that out at the beginning, and this might be the fruit being born of that. You know, if there had been a little bit more groundwork laid and they could have, like, worked with the public health departments in all these different areas a little bit more stringently, maybe you wouldn't be having this issue right now.
Yeah.
So I think that could have played a role. I think there's a lot of different things that could be playing a role right now. But end result is, I mean, things are again getting worse in the state of the pandemic crap. And I think it's bearing some ugly fruit in the Pac-12, because we not only had the game cancellations, as I mentioned, Washington State was down 32 guys in a victory, and Stanford was down its quarterback. So there's some very real things happening across the board. And there's probably going to be at least, I would guess, one or two more cancellations this weekend for the Pac-12, maybe more. Obviously, a precarious situation here at the start of the season.
I would think, too, just we don't know the numbers, but like with Stanford having Davis Mills out, they still played the game. I think if it was the city of Berkeley, they probably wouldn't have allowed any Stanford quarterback to play. They would have probably had to go into quarantine, I would think. So in the Bay Area, it seems a little different.
Yeah, probably. I mean, and I'm sure that's a little bit different. And maybe that's, again, a situation like what I would be looking at is, what is Cal's relationship with its city public health department? Because That seems like maybe the biggest issue here, because it does seem different from everyone else. And I think it's easy to seize upon from a certain perspective. Oh, Berkeley being all, you know, whatever, COVID conscious or whatever, because of the name Berkeley. But it might simply be that they don't have a great relationship with the university, and this is kind of playing out, you know, in a certain weird way right now. Because yeah. It doesn't seem like that's happening at Stanford, right? Jack West was able to start that game and play.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I mean, so it could be different. Again, though, I would look at what ends up happening with Utah. What ends up happening, you know, are they going to be able to play? Because if they're not, then that means they're going through a pretty stringent quarantine process themselves. So I think they're... I don't know. It's going to be a very strange year. We've been saying that from the beginning. And I think it's going to be an extremely strange November, because just timing, the Pac-12 is opening up at just about the worst time to be opening up a football season.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The timing didn't work out. Starting earlier was better because the whole coronavirus situation was just better. Now it's getting worse when you're trying to start. But Wilner's question I thought was interesting. And, you know, if you're just talking to anybody and, you know, you're trying to be like, oh, let's try to be reasonable. Like, okay, well, you wanted 100. Here's 98. Can you? Okay, that's fine. Let's do it. So when he's like 13 days in a row, 13 negative tests, do I have to quarantine day 14? Yep. Like it was so there was just no flexibility there. And I wonder like what your point was. What is their relationship like? Is like, was that health board like pissed off from the beginning that football was even going to be played and would look for any way possible to try to shut it down? Maybe. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say, but that just seemed such an inflexible answer.
The Bay Area specifically has done, I think, I think there's maybe some local pride in how they've dealt with this, because I think just generally speaking, the Bay Area relative to population is probably one of the better places in the world from, you know, or at least from the United States, from like a case and death standpoint. So there might be some of that going on. I would say it's a lot of the local relationship though. And there might be some of that local politics. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, there's a little bit of why are these idiots even trying to play a football season? This is stupid. Which frankly is opinion I echo. I would understand if they feel that way. But I think that speaks to, again, maybe some lack of groundwork that was laid from the Pac-12, maybe some lack of relationship from Cal, with their public health department that's maybe playing a role in this. End of the day, though, this is a very minor key note, and I think the end result is a lot more games are going to be canceled for a lot more cases than this. So it's an interesting little, you know, footnote to start the year on, but I don't think this is going to be the story we're talking about in a couple of weeks. Yeah. I think it's going to be, oh, wow, Utah can only play two games this season, or, oh, wow, nobody's playing anymore. Oh, wow, they had to cancel every single game this weekend. I think that's more, and I hope not, but I think that's more the trend line we're on.
Yeah. It, you know, and we've talked about this. It's like, if you're going to make the decision to play, I don't think you can expect teams to be perfect, you know, and you want them to be. And I think it seems like a lot of teams are trying to be as diligent as they possibly can, you know, and for the most part,
I give them a lot of credit so far. I think most of them are being pretty diligent. I thought it was very weird that Washington State didn't announce their people out until after the game. But I think for the most part, it's all talk and stuff, but the talk matters from leaders. And it seems like all of the coaches are very much taking this seriously. That Kyle Whittingham, when he was talking about it, there wasn't a note of, oh, this isn't a serious deal, I wish these guys could be back out there. I mean, he was acknowledging the seriousness of it. I think they've all done a conscientious effort. I think they've done the best they can. I think the reality is the Western states generally are dealing with this more seriously, stringently, whatever you want to call it, than a lot of other states, particularly in the South, which is where most of the football has been happening so far. So there's just a reality to the geography you're in, and that reality, the political geography, is that there's going to be more postponements and cancellations because the policies and whatnot are going to be more strict.
SEC canceling 4 of 7 games, like, that makes it national. That makes it a national thing. It's not a
Ohio State had to cancel this weekend as well. Yeah. So there's a lot of that going on. I mean, and the Big Ten, I think, is in a somewhat similar boat. I mean, Wisconsin having to cancel, I think, their first two games. There's just – it's a – I think the Big Ten timed it a little bit better because they started a couple weeks earlier. But anybody who started in late October, early November, I would be shocked if many of those teams are getting six games in.
Yeah. Well, so for this weekend, as of today, we're recording on Wednesday. John Wilner reported, he said he got off the phone with Pac-12 Chief of Football Operations, Merton Hanks. And the quote we got, this was earlier on Wednesday, as of right now, we're on track to play all six games. But as you know, everything is subject to change at any time. So I don't know how much that helps. But as of now, that's the case. I know Cal, they were trying to figure some things out. Could they potentially move? Utah had got some guys out of quarantine and seem to have the numbers now, but obviously things could still get worse. Other guys could test positive. I don't know. Who do you think is more at risk to losing the game this weekend, Cal or Utah?
I think the Cal thing is more, it seems like that's more of a political problem, which I think is more solvable. Like, I think that might be Utah's problem seems more like, and this is just reading the tea leaves, Utah's problem seems more like numbers. Like, yes. If they truly have two more cases, they might be done. Cal's seems more like it's something that might be solved with three conversations, long, arduous conversations, but conversations. So I would say Cal has more of a likelihood of playing this weekend. I think Utah, it's just going to be, you know, cross your fingers and hope no one else gets it. Right. And I just don't, Utah's, the state situation isn't great right now. So it's a hard thing to count on.
So that not just screwed up, you know, a third of the schedule, for week one. It also did a little bit of a number on our, suicide pool, the survival pool, because I thought people were tweeting me and I'm like, yeah, if you know, we probably just give you a pass if you picked a game that was canceled. But Matthew pointed out to us over email, so I had to tweet it out and let everyone know, hey, and the rules were if a game gets canceled, you have to go back into the spreadsheet and resubmit your pick. So thanks, Matthew, for tabulating all of those. So I went and did that. I don't think you got a chance to redo yours, Dave. So
no, I'm out. I got done. You're out.
But okay, so there were 122 entries in the pool. Only 26 survived week one. And we knew it would be tougher because there's two games to pick. So there were 72 people picked Oregon, so they moved on. 36 people, well, they had potential to move on. 36 picked USC, 8 picked Washington State. Wow, that's impressive. And 8 picked Colorado. Of the losers, 50 had UCLA. So a lot of people at UCLA, they lost. 38 people at Oregon State, they lost. 3 at Arizona State. They lost that they probably shouldn't have. And 2 had Stanford. That's a weird one. Okay. And unfortunately, 25 people had Utah. Someone had Washington. Someone had Cal in the canceled games. And they didn't redo their picks. So they're out. So the result is 26 people had both two wins. 50 had a win and a loss. 19 people had two losses. And the rest were people that had a cancellation or whatever. So, yeah, only 26 people survived, but I was one of them. I did pick Oregon, and I switched from who do I have? Utah, I think, originally. I switched from Utah to USC.
Right. Well, very exciting for you.
Yay. But thanks, Matthew, for compiling all of that. So that's good stuff. Before we jump into our Game 1 recaps and previews, I want to thank my bookie, tell you about a little bit. So late college football, the NBA bubble, UFC Fight Island. It's clear 2020 has been a year unlike any other, which is why you need a sports book with offers unlike any other. Get some skin in the game with MyBookie, where odds, boosts, lightning deals, and free bets await all season long. And with Turkey Day right around the corner, I love Turkey Day, Dave, there's really no better time to feast on some NFL action. Whether you're a first-time customer or if you've been playing with MyBookie for years, there's no shortage of value to be found in the thousands of game lines, unique prop bets, and contests that they offer every single week. Sign up or get reloaded today. Find an edge, make your bet, and get paid. They also boast a full-fledged casino platform, giving you access to all of the classic table, slot, and card games you expect to find at your local spot. And the best part is, at MyBookie, the doors never close. You can continue to build your bankroll even after the stadium lights have gone out. Make the right play and sign up today at MyBookie. And when you do, use promo code PAC12 to get your deposit matched halfway, all the way up to $1,000. The terms are simple. You put in 200, they match you with another 100 in your account. If you're already planning to bet this season, this is betting with free money. It's winning season at MyBookie. So come join in on the fun and win some cash while you're at it. All right. Thanks to MyBookie. And we got to get into our
Pac-12 roundup.
When's the last time we played that, Dave?
I think during our preview session.
It's been a while. I don't even know if we did during the
We did round. It. There was some point. It might have been following recruiting. We've done it in the last 6 months, I think.
And I almost like forgot about it, but it is there. So what we're going to do is we've redid our power rankings. They got shaken up a little bit. And we will go in reverse order and talk about each team along the way. So first up, we have
UCLA Bruins.
They were on the road taking on
Colorado Buffalo.
Sorry, I just had to clear some air. UCLA lost to Colorado 48-42. Which is both a deceptive and proper score for the game. Deceptive in that Colorado at one point had a 35-7 lead. Properly reflective because when you boil out the turnovers that were kind of ridiculous for UCLA, it was a relatively even game. So I think it kind of shook out properly in the end. UCLA's terrible. Colorado, I don't know. I don't know. I think you've got to give Colorado some credit. I think they had a really good game plan. I think Jarek Broussard is a stud. Sam Neuer really impressed me because the last time I saw him throwing, I didn't think he should ever again throw a football. But this game, there were still some wobblers, still some inaccuracy, but he made some throws when he needed to, particularly in the seam. He was pretty confident throwing over the middle, which I would be too. I would be too against UCLA's secondary. But Neuer did a pretty good job doing it. It was very funny. It was a very funny game. I think that shouldn't be discounted. UCLA had, I think, 4 turnovers in basically the first 20 minutes of the game, including a punt return fumble, an interception from Dorian Thompson-Robinson where he was throwing a hitch and threw it directly into the arms of an outside linebacker. A fumble by Dorian Thompson-Robinson on some sort of zone read fake handoff type deal. And then a fumble by Demetric Felton. And all of that to eventually lead Carl Durrell to a victory over UCLA. That's all funny. That's objectively funny, and I think we all need to sit here and acknowledge that. UCLA. So there was a lot of talk in the offseason that the defense would be a better, more aggressive unit. And that showed up for about a series in this game. And then the defense was pretty terrible after that. They couldn't stop Colorado's rushing attack. Broussard was just knifing off the edge for 10 yards a pop for a long stretch of this game. The defense looked misaligned. It looked like they were confused. Some of that was certainly Colorado. I'm going to give them credit, but I think a lot of it was just clearly UCLA was my read on it was they were caught between maybe in a too many cooks situation where they have the new guy coming in, Brian Norwood, who's installing his 4-2-5, and they still have the old kind of guard, Jerry Azzanaro and so on in the leadership roles calling the game. And so you saw this kind of mismarried aggression at the beginning, followed by a lot of passive defense. And then offensively, it was just a load of turnovers. And then, UCLA got it going a little bit after that, but it was still, not nearly enough. So Colorado, I think hard to say whether they're going to be great this year or good or even average, but UCLA, they're going to be bad.
You think they're going to be bad? All right. Well,
UCLA.
I think they're going to be bad.
They're going to be bad. Like, there's a chance if Utah is not down to, like, the walk-ons, like Kyle Whittingham was saying, they're going to lose this weekend. And then, I don't know, man. I mean, Arizona, we haven't seen them yet. But this smells like 1-5 at best to me.
And so this was a bit of a shocker to me. You actually got this one right. You picked Colorado. I took UCLA. And I'm sorry I didn't announce where they were. UCLA is number 12 in our power rankings. We have Colorado up at number 8 now. Sometimes when you watch these with our picks, and we talk about this a lot, like, you just kind of know when you see the beginning of the game, you're like, this ain't going my way, you know, like this, or whatever way I picked. So UCLA gets an initial stop. You're like, oh, that's good. Oh, then they fumble the punt return. Okay. And then Colorado gets the ball to 25 and they score a touchdown 3 plays later. Then DTR throws a pick, sets up the second touchdown. So they get 2 touchdowns in about 2 minutes and it's 14-0 already. You're like, really, UCLA? This is how you're going to come out? Like, you get a stop. I mean, you get the ball back and you kick a field goal or something. Like, it's a whole different game, but you turn it over, you turn it over again. And, you know, what, like you said, it was 35-7. You know, it's like, at that point, what are you going to do? Like, was it going to be a Washington State type of comeback? I was hoping, but, you know, they end up falling short. So Colorado had almost 40 minutes time of possession in this game. 92 plays they ran, 21 points off turnovers for Colorado. So, yeah, those 4 giveaways early when it was 35-7 really kind of sunk UCLA's boat. But I was really impressed with Colorado. I picked them to go winless again, so you guys can thank me, all the Colorado fans, because obviously that's not going to happen. The Buffs, yeah, I mean, my theory going into this was, with Carl Durrell, no spring practices, things were, you know, they lose guys like Chenault and Tony Brown and Steven Montez and all those guys. It was going to be a problem, but they had a lot of guys coming back on defense, and I think they played pretty well, you know, and there was some continuity there with the coaching staff, and Carl Durrell, he has to get some credit for being able to get this team prepared in a short time and look pretty good. You know, was it weird for UCLA to go on the road for in the early of the pandemic? Maybe, I don't know. It didn't seem to, it didn't bother. Didn't bother Washington State too much when they had to go on the road. But this just looked like, it looked like one, the Colorado team was one that had all the continuity, and the UCLA team had just like put the band together like 2 weeks ago and we're trying to figure things out.
Well, and that's the big thing, is that it's year 3 for Chip Kelly. It's year 3 for Dorian Thompson-Robinson. And it still looks like this. Like, this is what it looks like. I'm not trying to knock Colorado, and I understand that this is going to come off this way, but I don't mean it in like a super negative way. But this is a rebuilding Colorado team that was playing a guy who was in the safety room last year at quarterback, and their second or third string running back, who was out all of last year with an ACL. And I mean, it was nearing a blowout for long periods of this game. UCLA in year 3 under Chip Kelly, charitably, you would say they played an even game against a Colorado team that's rebuilding, that was playing a guy who played safety last year at quarterback. Like, that's what you're saying, is that in year 3, that's what Chip Kelly's team is capable of playing. Yeah, more or less an even game if you throw out the turnovers. That's crazy. I mean, that's a failure in the job. This story's written. It's just a question of how long it's going to go on now at this point. But you can't be in year 3 doing that kind of stuff. Not at UCLA, where the one advantage of being at UCLA is that you can actually recruit at a pretty high level, and you're not even doing that. And it's clear now that the team is not particularly talented. Like, we saw it in the 247 composite thing, the you know, team talent composite or whatever it's called. UCLA is like 6th in the league, and that's what that looked like. Like, it's not like they're playing above their weight. That's exactly what they looked like on Saturday. They looked like a team that's middling talent-wise. So it's a miserable failure. It's going to end at some point. Now it's just a question of when.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We moved Colorado up a little bit, but are they good, or is UCLA that bad, or is what combination?
I mean, Colorado's clearly better than UCLA.
Yes.
And the question is whether they're going to be better than, you know, Arizona and maybe playable with ASU and Utah.
Yeah.
That's going to be the question, where they stack in the hierarchy. But I think they made a definitive case that they are better than UCLA.
Well, speaking of, our number 11 team is
Arizona Wildcats.
And you know what we need? We need a drop. So anyone out there, can we get a like COVID canceled, like just audio drop? And so I'll press that. So I guess we could just record what I just said. COVID canceled.
COVID canceled.
Ooh, I like that. Let me mark down what when that was. We're like at the 39 minute. Okay, cool. Yeah, maybe we'll, I'll just use that.
There you go.
But as you know, this was canceled. So we didn't get to see Arizona. We didn't get to see what Paul Rhodes and that defense were going to look like running that 3-4, even though you don't have any linebackers. So we don't know. So no Arizona. So we'll preview their game coming up. So our number 10 team, man, this really disappointed me, David.
Oregon State Beavers.
We had high hopes for Angie and the Beavs, and they were hosting the now number 7 team,
Washington State Cougars.
Oh wait, hold on.
Washington State Cougars.
That's the one I wanted. I did the wrong one.
There you go.
What do you think, Dave?
So Washington State won 38-28. This one started off, I mean, it was more or less a, I don't know, looked like it was going to be a defensive struggle, which would have been shocking for these two teams. But it was punt, 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 punt. Tristan Jebbia started off kind of slow for Oregon State. And I think, you know, that offense got going a little bit more in the second half, but it was slow going at the beginning. But Washington State really didn't pounce at that point. I was pretty impressed with Jaden DeLora, you know, for a guy in his first college game, essentially. I thought he played really well. I thought the offense for Washington State after, again, that first little stretch where it was a little slow going, you know, for first year, essentially, and not having much of a spring or, you know, kind of, and not having apparently 32 guys available for the game, it looked okay. Looked all right. You know, not quite, you know, Mike Leach, you know, being able to just fire on all cylinders from game one, but certainly pretty close to that. And I thought Oregon State, after that first stretch, I thought they looked pretty good too. It looked like a pretty even game to me. And ultimately just they, you know, I think Washington State just got it going a little bit quicker at the beginning of the game. So I would have liked to see more out of that Oregon State defense, you know, because we were talking them up quite a bit and they did give up, you know, over 450 yards and even amounts of rushing and passing, which isn't great. You know, you get 230 yards on the ground. That's not awesome. But I thought it was overall a relatively even game. It's just kind of Washington State got it going a little bit earlier than Oregon State and forced them in a position where they couldn't be as balanced.
It was just a weird one. And I expected so much from, so this is the other game that surprised me. Cause I really felt like Washington State coming in. What were they doing? Did they, have any spring practices? No. Do you got a brand new head coach? Yeah. Are you starting a true freshman quarterback coming in from Hawaii? Yep. Do you have your top running back, Max Borgi, in there? Nope. Plus, all the other guys out, we didn't even know that they were going to be out. Like, on paper, what the hell happened here? And you look at some of the stats, like the yards were about the same. Oregon State had 29 first downs to Washington State's 21. They didn't throw an interception. They didn't fumble the ball. The time of possession was about the same. There wasn't a lot, you know, they had less penalties. They were better on third down. It's like, how did Oregon State lose this game? But it seemed to like the good play, like if you needed a play, the freshman quarterback for Washington State did it. You know, I mean, he wasn't super efficient. What, 18-33? He had 2 touchdowns and a pick. But, you know, he ran the ball when he had to. He had 43 yards on the ground. I think a couple of those were sacks. I think he had actually had more than that. You know, they had Deion McIntosh, you know, rush for 147 yards in the game. I mean, he was effective. Travell Harris had over 100 yards receiving. Like, it just was like, I don't know. Washington State came out and played like they had been around a while. Like, this didn't look like one team that everything was brand new.
No, definitely not.
And yeah. One team had 3 years of everybody, you know, and you think are on a positive trajectory. So, this was a disappointing one for the Beavers. They scored, you know, 14 in the fourth quarter to make it a little closer, but Washington State was in control of this game most of the way. So Yeah, that one and you know, the Colorado UCLA game just kind of, you know, surprised me that both of those schools with brand new head coaches, brand new quarterbacks, were able to come out and play teams that, you know, had more experience that you thought might be on the rise, maybe not as much UCLA. And they couldn't do it. And I don't know, it was I was disappointed. Sorry, Angie, sorry, Beaver fans, but man, that I really had some faith that Oregon State was gonna win this game.
I still have some faith in Oregon State. As you know, I am a longtime Oregon State fan, super fan, you might say. So I think they're going to rebound just fine.
All right. Well, you picked them to only win one game, and that was it. So
don't worry about it.
I picked them to beat Stanford at the end of the season. We'll see. But yeah, we had some optimism for the Beavs, and yeah, that didn't happen. Okay, so next up, we have, this is our number 9 team.
Stanford Cardinal.
And they went on the road to take on our number 1 team.
Oregon Ducks.
That noise you heard was Jet Toner once again missing a field goal. so this is, Oregon won 35-14. It wasn't just the Jet Toner missed field goals, although there were many that caused this loss for Stanford. The decision-making, I would think, that leads to, what was it? Was it 4 missed field goals?
I believe 4 of them, yeah.
Yeah, 4 missed field goals. I mean, that it's a 21-point deficit, but that is 12 points, if my math is correct. That would have factored into this loss and given them 26 against Oregon's 35, which suddenly makes this a much more even game.
They would have covered the spread, yeah.
Yeah, but the decisions that, you know, lead you to making or attempting 4 different field goals at different points, certainly those fall on other entities besides poor Jet Toner.
How David Shaw is that? Like,
pretty good. Oh, it's so David Shaw. To be in a position to miss 4 field goals in a game, that's truly incredible. Okay, so Stanford, I thought to open this game, I thought they were kind of doing everything they needed to do besides, again, missing field goals. But, I mean, they were holding on to the ball. They looked – you could kind of squint and see vintage Stanford in those first 2 drives especially, where they were just kind of running the ball, eating some clock, and, you know, keeping that defense on the field. And I thought they looked pretty good, and that was – pretty much the last of looking good that Stanford had. I thought Oregon then started to exert its will, especially on the ground, you know, kind of running at that defense. And again, those missed field goals were just devastating, every single one of them. Because it would have, like, it's not even just that it's, you know, 12 points. It's like that first one, they make that, it's a 10-point game instead of a 7-0 game. They make the second one, it's, you know, it would have been 13-7. If they'd made those first 2. I mean, it's just at any point it might have changed the way the game would have been called by both staffs. So, I mean, it's obviously it's not, you know, 7 field goals that would have made the difference. But, man, missed field goals, man. They'll kill you. They'll kill you if you're running a very conservative offense.
And that's what Stanford was doing. Oh, by the way, we did get the Oregon State game wrong. Both of us picked Oregon State. That didn't happen. We got this one right. We both took Oregon laying 11 points. And...
Oh, wait, hang on. I got to shout out my man, Jack West, because he was not the worst quarterback of all time in this game. And the last time he played against UCLA, we'll just say it was close to being that quality. So he's improved since then.
He did. You know, and, you know, no Davis Mills. We found out about that. And a couple other guys missed this one. So you knew this was going to be a tough road trip. But turnovers from Oregon early on kind of kept Stanford in the game early. But, you know, then Oregon got it rolling. So 7 of Oregon's 9 drives reached the red zone for Stanford. So that's not good. They really weren't stopping Oregon all that much. Oregon scored on every drive in the second half. And on their final 5 drives, and 4 of those final 5 were touchdowns. So it was, you know, it was close for a while, and then Oregon just sort of like opened it up and put a beat down on Stanford. So it was rough. You know, not the best showing for David Shaw. Obviously, you feel bad for a guy like Jet Toner, you know, missing all those field goals and stuff. But yeah, I don't know, Dave. This was This was kind of this one went sort of the way I thought, maybe not in the beginning, but, you know, over a 60-minute game, you thought, okay, Oregon's going to take care of business.
Oregon not being super sharp made total sense. Almost exactly what I would have expected. You know, Stanford, maybe a little bit. I mean, if Davis Mills had been playing, I think that would have been interesting. Maybe this game would have been competitive with all the kind of, you know, early issues, rusty issues that Oregon was having. But with Jack Weston there, obviously that kind of limits the potential.
Yeah. All right. So that was our number 9 team. Our number 8 team, we already talked about Colorado. Number 7 team, we already talked about Washington State. Our number 6 team,
Utah Utes.
You gonna do it?
COVID canceled.
Nice. Yeah. So supposed to play Arizona. That was that did not happen. And yeah, so we got to move on. Okay, so then our number 5 team we have
California Golden Bears.
COVID canceled.
2? Crap. Oh, that was going to be a good one too, because they were going to take on the number 4
Washington Huskies.
COVID canceled.
Nice. That really was a bummer. Like, we wanted to watch Oregon State and Washington State for sure, but we probably have been watching more of Cal Washington, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they were on the same time. Unless the Cal Washington was earlier, but
the same time.
Same time, yeah. Just a bummer, you know, just a bummer that we didn't get to see this game. So I know Washington said if they were in Cal's situation, Jimmy Lake said that they would have been able to play. Like, they wouldn't have to quarantine a whole position group. They apparently have a better relationship with the local health officials than Cal and the city of Berkeley does. But so maybe that's a little, I felt like Jimmy Lake was just sort of rubbing salt in the wounds. Like, hey, if that was us, we'd be playing.
Right.
But all right. And this team actually moved up a little bit. David suggested a number 3 team,
Arizona State Sun Devils.
They were in a heartbreaker at the Coliseum against number 2
USC Trojans.
So I have I've got like several thoughts about this game. Okay, so USC ended up winning 28-27. Ryan was right in Clay Helton's obituary, like midway fourth quarter, before the stirring comeback, when it was like 27-14, I think. You were like, oh man, this is brutal for our man Clay. What'd you tweet out? You tweeted out something.
I don't remember exactly.
I had to defend my boy against
I don't think, I mean, I'm pretty much beyond the point of saying, I don't think he's going to be fired this year, no matter what, because I think you have to wait until 2021. But this was brutal. It was a brutal showing for the Trojans at home.
So I found your tweet. So many problems for this USC football team. One of them is the Trojans essentially having 2 decent opponents on their schedule and is about to lose to one of them. So that was at 27-14. And then USC obviously had the crazy, you know, fourth down touchdown pass to Brew McCoy, followed by the onside kick recovery, and then the touchdown to Drake London. But the thing was, looking at this game, I mean, USC was a circus of disaster, but they were moving the ball on ASU basically the whole time. It was 1 turnover on downs, the ASU 46 on 4th and 1. They had an interception after getting a turnover of their own at the ASU 24. They had another turnover on downs at the ASU 6. They had another fumble at the ASU 31. Like, there were so many opportunities where they got it onto the ASU side of the field where they should have at least walked away with 3 points, where they just shot themselves in the foot over and over and over again, that it checking out at the end, that they actually were able to finally just get out of their own way and score a couple of easy touchdowns. It doesn't shock me that they were able to do that, because they just spent the entire game just shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
But I mean, looking at the statistics at the end of the day, this should have been one that they won, I wouldn't say comfortably, but they should have won this one much easier than they did. Now, and that's not to take anything away from ASU. I thought Jaden Daniels played a gutty game. Obviously not his best throwing it, but ran the ball really well, importantly. But
I thought USC was, you know, and as we expected, they were the more talented team, and they just, and maybe that's a mentally soft team. Maybe you can make a roundabout argument about it being the head coach's fault. Because of course it is, it's Clay Helton. But once they got out of, you know, their own way, they, you know, were taking it to ASU pretty well. So
it was like 3 minutes left. So 3 minutes left. USC's down 27-14. It's fourth and 13 for the Trojans. And ESPN said they had like a 99.8 or 99.9% chance to lose the game. Like Arizona State was like a lock at that point. And then they throw a pass in the end zone. Amon-Ra St. Brown, maybe on purpose, maybe accidental, tips it, and it lands in Brew McCoy's arms, and they score a touchdown on that fourth down. They have a true freshman kicker, beat out like the, you know, the junior, senior kid or whatever that had a lot of, you know, clutch kicks in his lifetime. Perfect execution on an onside kick, and they recover it, and they go down. And on a fourth and 9 play, throw a touchdown that Drake London catches with his fingertips in traffic, and, you know, low percentage play. That one works too. Kicks the extra point. Boom, they win the game. I mean, it was pretty insane the way the last 3 minutes, the way they went. I was impressed with Arizona State. I thought they'd come out and look like a well-coached team, and they did. And, you know, I was a little disappointed. I thought Jaden Daniels could move the ball through the air a little more, but they controlled the game most of the way. They took advantage of the turnovers. They turned it over twice, but then returned it over from USC. So they didn't give up any points off those turnovers. And I thought they played a smart game, and I didn't feel like they were trying to like run out the clock. They were doing smart things. And then just everything came up aces for the Trojans at the end of the game, and the talent on the field just shone through. And where, you know, they made a bunch of mistakes before, and that was a gut wrenching one for Herm Edwards, because I mean, he said afterwards, it was just like, you know, one of those ones you'll never forget. Really, by the way, that, you know, you look at the entire game. Yeah, USC probably going to win the game, but you look at the way it played out. There's no way USC won that game.
Oh God,
and end up with it. Yeah. No.
I'm just saying, like, it was actually a perfect like game, an encapsulation of what the statistics should have done. Like, because they were getting just, I mean, they all right. So Jack Jones fumbles that punt return, right? And then they get the ball, and then they fumble that one away too. Like, it's like five possessions within the ASU 30 that they just got nothing from. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I mean, that's going to even out in the long run. And it just so happened that the long run encompassed the last 3 minutes of the game.
We both got this one right. USC was favored by 10.5. We both took Arizona State, but we both picked USC to win. Yeah, so we got this one perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing has been more obvious than USC should not have been favored by double digits in this game.
Yeah. I mean, Herm Edwards himself never, like, you know, always within a touchdown. We know that. Cool. All right. Well, those are all the games. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and preview week 2. All right. We're back here on the Peristyle podcast. No, we're not.
Nope.
We're on the podcast of champions. I've already done a Peristyle podcast today. And I got a show later tonight. So this is like a big show day for me. I got a live show. There's too much.
Show day.
Big show day. Too many things into one deal. But we got to preview all of our week 2 games here in the Pac-12. And we got a couple early ones. So why don't we start with
Colorado Buffalo.
Heading up to the farm to take on
Stanford Cardinal.
We have such limited data here. 12:30 on ESPN, Colorado going to Stanford. Stanford is a 6.5-point favorite. So here's what we know about Colorado definitively. Jarek Broussard is, do I know if he's a good running back? I have no idea. Because UCLA, that's all. Just because of UCLA. Sam Neuer can complete passes. He seems to like his tight end a lot. Is he good? Again, I do not know UCLA.
He can run.
Yes, he can. I'm pretty sure Colorado's secondary is not good. And the reason I know that is because UCLA was able to do things against that secondary, and that is proof positive that your unit is not good. If UCLA is able to do something against your particular unit, that means that unit is definitively bad. So Colorado's secondary, probably not good. Everything else about that team could be anywhere from not good to good. We do not know. Stanford, I feel okay about that running game. Okay. I'm not going to go further than that. We don't know. Is Davis Mills definitively out this week?
We don't know.
We don't know. I'm taking Colorado because I've seen – I think I have more definitive information about them. We saw Oregon's rushing attack do a pretty good job against Stanford. I think Colorado's is okay. I like that offensive line okay. I like Jarek Broussard. Sam Neuer as a runner I like. So I'll take Colorado on those points here. I don't know if they win, but I think they keep it closer than 6.5.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing because, you know, you add a few missed field goals in there and that 6.5 is really like,
yes,
you
yes,
know, so yes. Yeah. I mean,
though I will note, Colorado had a retirement from James Stefano, I want to say, their longtime kicker. He got hurt during the game, it sounds like, and is now, I think, taking a retirement.
Yeah, I think Adam Munstertiger tweeted about him, just how lovely he was to cover and just to someone he enjoyed covering. So good luck in your retirement. And yeah, we'll see what the Buffs can do. I like the way they looked. I'm still not sold on Stanford, and I'm getting 6.5 points. So I'm going to take Colorado. Pretty good chance that this is the game that Stanford like looks really good in, and then they're going to get some favorable lines down the road, and then we'll just hammer them for that. But I'll take the 6.5 at this point. It's just when you don't have as much data, I'm going to take almost a touchdown. I think I got to take that. I think there's a good enough chance that Colorado comes in and plays well and actually, you know, gets a win on the road.
Totally.
All right. Next up, we have
USC Trojans
playing the opener for
Arizona Wildcats. Wow.
This one's on at 12:30 on Fox. Arizona. USC's a 2-touchdown favorite, 14 points. I'm of like several minds about this. First, Arizona hasn't played. They're probably going to be eager and hungry to play. So that factors in. It's at home. That factors in. Who's playing linebacker for Arizona? Is it you?
Okay, no. So Anthony Pandy is good, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think outside of him, I think there's walk-ons. No, the two deep, I talked to Jason Shear today. He said in the two deep, because they want to use four linebackers, there's likely going to be three walk-ons on the two deep, and they want to rotate guys. But they might have to do more nickel, but then you're not really a 3-4. Now you're a 3-3-5, which is what they were running before, right?
So. You know, I'm on record as saying that USC has a brutal schedule this year, and it should, you know, Clay Helton should get credit if he emerges 2-4. And 3-3, obviously, he should get an extension. You know I'm on record saying that.
You are, yes.
This, though, never presented as one of those tough games. And as much as I am reluctant to pick USC as a heavy favorite in a game this season because of that brutal schedule they're dealing with, I'm having a hard time seeing a situation where this one ends up close. Like, I'm having a really hard time with it. I think USC may be a little bit embarrassed after last week. I think they're going to be able to run all over this Arizona team. And who in that secondary is stopping that receiving core? I really have no idea. If Arizona is going to be marching up and down the field, even with our man Grant Gunnell there. So I'm going to take USC minus 14. I don't feel good about it, but I know it's going to be opposite you because you're never taking USC in the points.
You will. Yeah, I will go opposite. It's just, it's really hard because it is a road game. We don't know how this team's going to, you know, do they play a little bit weird? Is Arizona fired up or are they rusty as hell? I think the Arizona defensive line is going to be pretty good. They actually have some depth there. There's a couple good linebackers, but for the most part, like I said, there are some issues. And then, you know, the secondary, I think, is going to be all right. They got a good stable of running backs. They might be able to control the ball. Grant Gunnell, you know, he's got a strong arm. The USC secondary did a good job.
He's got a gun.
The secondary for USC did a great job against Jaden Daniels throwing the ball. They had a hard time stopping the run. And you know, our strong arm Greg Cannell's not really the most fleet of foot. He's not, you know, he can run sometimes, but not like, he's not a runner.
He can run the way you or I can run.
Right. But not like a Jaden Daniels can run or something. So it's really tough. I mean, I kind of think USC is going to go in and boat race them, but that's 14 points. And so I'm going to, like I said, there's so many uncertainties. There's so many unknowns. I'm going to take the 14 and just see if I can hang on.
All right. I love it.
Nice. All right. This one could be pretty good. We have
Oregon Ducks
going on the road to take on
Washington State Cougars.
Yes, this is on at 4 p.m. on Fox, number 11, Oregon now, going on the road at Washington State. Oregon is a 10-point favorite over the Cougs, which seems like a lot of respect for Washington State after the win over Oregon State, which I get. I think, you know, that Washington State offense certainly showed that it's not going to be a disaster in year one, or yeah, year one under Nick Rolovich. You know, they're going to hit the ground a little bit running. But still, I would say Oregon kind of outclasses them from a talent standpoint on both sides of the ball. It's a tough one. 10 points feels like it's rightly set. Like, it feels like it's, you know, pretty close to what I would have wanted to predict. I'll go, you know, because Oregon did have some issues kind of just getting it going to start the game. They had some turnover issues. Maybe the new quarterback in an unfriendly environment. It's going to be an empty stadium, but you know what I mean. I'll go Washington State plus 10. I mean, I think Oregon wins, but yeah, I'll go plus 10, Washington State.
You sound really confident. I don't want to put too much stock into what I saw last weekend, which I was impressed with what Washington State was able to do. But I just feel like there's, you know, Oregon had some rust. They got to wipe it off. Washington State came out and started playing pretty well. And then, you know, Oregon State kind of came on late. If Oregon State, Washington State played tomorrow, I would hope that Oregon State would play better and would actually like have a lead a lot of the time. I think Oregon's going to come in there and 10 seems right. But I can see, you know, a 14-point win or a 17-point win. So I'm going to take the Ducks in this one. It's tough. That's a lot of points. Giving up double-digit points when there's so many unknowns. But I will go opposite you and take the Ducks and see how they fare out in the Palouse. All right. Next up, we've got
California Golden Bears.
They're on the road taking on
Arizona State Sun Devils.
So all you losers and whiners complaining about the 9 a.m. game last week, congratulations. There are three games that are taking place after 7:30. It's great. Great. Good work, everyone. Whiners and losers. Babies. all right. This is the first one. It's on ESPN2. Cal going at ASU. ASU is a 4-point favorite. We've seen ASU. We have not seen Cal. Nothing has really changed with my estimation of ASU based off that first game. They kind of looked exactly how I thought they would, and I still don't know about Cal. So what you're really requiring me to do here is think about what I predicted in the preseason. And I think I predicted an ASU win, but would I have predicted an ASU win by 4? Certainly not. Because this is a classic good against good game, and this is Herm Edwards winning by 3. So give me Cal in those points.
So you're going with Cal, huh?
Oh, yeah, baby.
I'm going to agree with you here because I'm not sure. That was heartbreaking for Herm Edwards and his crew. They're returning home. I think they put a lot into that USC game. And when you put a lot into something like that, and then you're like basically have it won and then lose it at the end, I think there's an emotional component there too. I think Cal's going to have an emotional component. They really wanted to play Washington. So I think you're going to see, if the game is played, a fired up Cal team, and it's more than a field goal. So, I mean, I could see this being a close game either way. You're giving me 4 points. I'm going to take Cal and those points and see how they fare in Tempe.
All right.
All right. Next up, we've got
Utah Utes.
And they'll be at the Rose Bowl taking on
UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, it's another 7:30 game on Fox, Utah at UCLA. Utah's a 3.5-point favorite. This game probably isn't going to be played, but in the event it is, we haven't seen Utah yet. Looking at that team, they're returning basically two starters on defense, some more on offense, but it's going to be a little bit tricky figuring out what they're going to do defensively. We don't know how many players are going to play for Utah. If you're taking it on face that if they play this game, more than likely they'll have enough guys that it's not going to be too weird. So if they play, I'm assuming most of these guys will be available. But that defense, even if you acknowledge that it's mostly new, it's still going to be a Utah defense. Maybe a little bit lack of depth on the defensive line, but they've still got two huge defensive tackles who've played a lot of games. They're not starters, but they've played a lot of games. And they're returning two guys at end who have started games. You know, Max Dupai and Mika Tafua, I want to say, who have both started games. Tafua started most of last year. And then Devin Lloyd at linebacker, still really good. And then the secondary, it's returning no one and no starts. But they're starting, you know, Clark Phillips, who is basically the best recruit out of high school Utah's probably ever had. Nate Ritchie at safety, who's another true freshman. These guys might take their lumps, but they're not, it's not like plugging in just random true freshmen that Utah might have had to do, you know, 10 years ago. These are talented dudes. It's like when USC starts a true freshman, you know, Clark Phillips is that kind of level of player. So I don't know that they're going to suddenly be bad defensively. I think they're actually going to be okay. And then offensively, I think they'll be fine. UCLA is definitively bad. So if this game actually gets played, I think Utah wins this one going away. So I'll take Utah minus 3.5.
Yeah, 3.5 is just not this would have to be like 10 points or something before I start.
I don't think Utah's going to play. So I know the reports this week. I don't think they're going to play if it's walk-ons. Like if walk-ons are having to start for Utah, I don't think they're playing. But in the situation where they're actually allowed to play, that means guys got cleared. Is my guess.
Yeah.
My read of the situation. And if that happens, Utah should be favored by more than 3.5.
Yeah. So UCLA plus 3.5. That's nice. But yeah, I agree with you. I think if the game is played, if it's a situation where we get to see Utah travel to the Rose Bowl and play a game, it's going to be, you know, Utah's probably going to win by more than that, just from what I saw over UCLA over the weekend. So, yeah. So we'll both agree there and we'll take the Utes. And lay the 3.5. And we got one game left. We have
Oregon State Beavers.
They'll be in Seattle taking on
Washington Huskies.
So this is an 8 p.m. game on Fox Sports 1. Oregon State traveling to Washington. Washington's a 13.5-point favorite, which... that's a tough one for me because I still think Oregon State's going to be fine. I think the initial, you know, I think they really just kind of struggled at the beginning of that Washington State game and then they played better. So I don't know. I don't really know what to expect from Washington. If it's going to be the same kind of, you know, structure, games being called the same way as the Chris Peterson era, then 13.5 points feels high. If they're, you know, coaching up to their talent level a little bit more, particularly on offense, then maybe, you know, they could blow them out. I don't know. But Oregon State's, you know, I think Jonathan Smith, as much as anyone, probably has a good feel for what Washington likes to do, even with the kind of changeover on both sides of the ball. So I'll say Oregon State plays it relatively close and keeps it under the 13.5. So give me Oregon State.
Yeah, in these uncertain times, it's the double digit stuff is really tough for me. Like I felt confident Oregon is with a 10.1. Okay. That's okay. But like USC at 14, Washington 13.5. It's like, yeah, those teams could roll and they could win by 21 or something, but that's going to be tough. So Washington hasn't played yet. We saw Oregon State play a little better in the second half. So maybe I'll go with the Beavs. It's just, that's just a lot of points. And you can kind of feel like, all right, well, I got 13.5 points. There's a decent chance it stays within that.
Right.
All right. Well, those are all our picks. We got to get to some questions.
All right.
I think we start with Paul. He's Webfoot. He says, my favorite IPAs. None. IPAs are trash. If you like them, you are bad and you should feel bad. Also, talking about fishing is bad. So he's not happy with that. I don't mind IPAs. Like I like drinking, but no, I like other beers. But
this is my thing about IPAs, is there is nothing fundamentally superior about them compared to like literally any other, like, I don't know, boutique-y beer. And frankly, the difference between boutique-y type beer and like your average piss, like just the Bud Light or whatever that you scram out of a trash can, it's not as big as you guys are thinking. Like, it's sure, like a friggin' Dogfish Head tastes better than, you know, Coors Light, but is it that much better? Like, is it, you're still kind of drinking something that tastes like it's an armpit, right? Like, it's a beer. It's an acquired taste for a reason, because it doesn't taste good. You're not drinking it because it tastes good. You're drinking it because it makes your head fuzzy. That's the reason you drink.
I like again, my ambers. Again, and I like my reds.
No, you know, you like it because they taste better than the other ones, but not because it's objectively a good taste in your mouth. It doesn't taste like, again, I go back to my theory about this whole thing. Chocolate milk. If you were just drinking for taste, you would be drinking chocolate milk all day long, every day, because it tastes great. Right?
I had a hot chocolate this morning. It was good.
Yeah, because it tastes good.
Yeah.
But you're not, because the main reason you're drinking is not, it's not the taste. The taste is, you're convincing yourself of the taste so that you can do it, or you're comparing it to other items that do the thing that you actually want it to do, which is get your head bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, he goes on complaining. Talk about playoff expansion. It is also bad, not because it shouldn't be expanded, but because you guys are arguing the same 2 points back and forth for hours on end, strewn across many podcasts, and it needs to end, just like the Civil War generals and Disney princesses ended. Oh, speaking of, have you watched Mandalorian yet? I haven't watched it.
I haven't. I'm saving them up.
Okay. I'll probably save them up, too. Okay. Speaking of bad things, Chip Kelly is bad. He saw someone else's system implemented with great success, and as a duck, I will always be grateful. But it was just someone else's ideas at just the right time. In order to prove to himself that he is a good coach, he attempted to replicate his success by using a system he made up himself, and it isn't working. Chip doesn't have to be bad, although running Oregon's old offense won't solve everything, but he needs to show the world and himself that he can do it again with only his own ideas and with no more energy put into recruiting than he put in at Oregon. It failed in the NFL. It's failing at UCLA. And until he's willing to end his quest to prove himself to himself, he will never live up to his potential and a probably decent power five slash group of five. I'm sorry, as a probably decent power five slash group of five coach. Also, IPAs are bad. Paul Webfoot.
I appreciate the like sentiment. I think it strikes me as a little bit simplistic to say that I think the reality is he was very good. I think he had a lot of his own ideas that he brought into that thing. Nobody else was really running that, like what he was doing until he was doing it. So yeah. I don't think it's completely fair to him to say that was entirely someone else's ideas and he just kind of took the keys and ran with it. But that makes what's happening now even more bizarre, that he did have a really good idea once. And now he is trying to, I think most of what you said in the back half of this paragraph is right. Like, he is trying to do something different to prove something to himself, the NFL, somebody. That he can do it a different way too. But I'm with you. I don't think he would necessarily be stacking national titles if he was running a Blur or a souped up version of the Blur or some modernized version of the Blur or whatever you want to call it. But would it be better than what it is right now? Yeah. Yeah. It sure as hell would be. Even if you just take it as, would that be more of a fit for the quarterback and the offensive line he has? Yeah, it just fundamentally would be. Yeah, I think there's some reality to this. I just don't, and I know people who follow Oregon are probably going to be more in tune with what's going on up there, but Oregon, I mean, from my perspective of watching Oregon games at the time, they weren't doing anything like what Chip Kelly brought there in 2007 with Dennis Dixon before that. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't that. And then it got even more that in 2009 when he took over as the head coach. So he truly was an innovator, and I think he's just passed his sell-by date. I think his passion for everything has slowed considerably. I think there is something to the reality that it's only for a few different, you know, truly elite coaches that their fire remains the same forever. You know, Nick Saban, Urban Meyer,
they just want to keep doing it and crushing, probably because they've got a little bit of something wrong with their brain, right? But for, I think, some other people, you know, you might have the one period where you can be truly great, and then it's hard to get over that hump again. It's like somebody, you know, you do a really good job at one job, and then you go get a new job, and you're never the same guy again. You're yeah. not as eager to do the different things. You have to be internally driven in such a way, and I don't know that Chip Kelly is. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of factors playing in there, but certainly he is bad, and it's been bad now for a while.
All right.
All right. Next up, this is from Dave from, I pronounced this at one point correctly, but I don't know how to pronounce it anymore. Segoim? Something like that?
Sure. I don't know.
Calvidicament. Why does missing one position group this year make Cal cancel a game when they played the last two seasons without an offense? Can I get a rim shot?
We can give you.
I need a ba-dum-tsh.
I don't have one.
Yeah, it's fine. It was one positive test. With such strict rules, does Cal Stanford play any games this year? What about the rest of the Pac-12? Over under for each team's number of games played. Rank Disney Prince. Okay, so over under for each team's number of games played. I'm going to set all of them, besides Cal and Utah, at 4.
Wow. Okay.
And Cal and Utah will be at 3. Are they playing each other this year? No, they're not. So maybe they're all at 4.
Maybe they're all at 4. Okay.
All right.
I think that's probably safe. I could maybe go 4.5 and see, like, are you going to get 5? Are you going to get, you know, 5 or 6? Or are you going to get less than that? So
yeah.
The problem is if you get less than 5 or 6, it might be like 2.
Totally. All right. We are going to speed round over the next 20 minutes because Ryan is going to have to go. So Dave also asked about Disney princesses. How would they handle COVID?
We already talked about the Cal stuff, but yeah.
I mean, Cinderella's kind of reclusive. I mean, she has to maid around all day, so I think she'd be kind of homebound. Except for the ball, which is that could be a super spreader event. But she only really goes out once, so it's quantity plus the events themselves. So I think she would be relatively safe. Belle being trapped in a mansion with just like a single person and a bunch of animate objects that most likely cannot transmit COVID, I think that would be significant, right? I think she'd be okay. Elsa certainly would be fine because she builds an ice castle for herself off in the wilderness. And before that is shut up in her own house for like literally her entire childhood. So I think she would be in pretty good shape.
The Aladdin one would be screwed, right? You get there's people.
Jasmine would be okay, but then she like mixes with the hoi polloi after a little while.
Yeah.
And once you go out and yeah, you can't do that. So I don't think, I think she would be bringing it back. To everyone, Aladdin, Jafar, the whole crew. So that wouldn't be good. Mulan, obviously.
Little Mermaid. I'm sorry.
Little Mermaid. So here's underwater. Her decision making is obviously poor because she elects to get legs to go up and mix with people. We don't know about the transmission among mermaids, but we know for a fact that people transmit COVID pretty well. So obviously, she's not a good decision maker. I think that would be trouble. Mulan, she leaves her family to go hang out in an army camp, again, that's probably not a good decision in a time of transmission. I think in either venue, she might have trouble, but certainly in the army camp, I think she's more susceptible. Pocahontas, way too interested in hanging out with the incoming Europeans, you know, people from other areas. You don't want to mix with groups coming in. You want to stick in your kind of tight circles, so she's in trouble. Yeah, I think your best contenders there are probably Belle, Elsa. I think Elsa obviously is the one taking the cake here because she's like naturally wanting to build an ice castle and be by herself.
What about Rapunzel?
Well, Rapunzel, again, she's way too eager to get out. So if we're talking about Rapunzel prehistory, like before the start of the movie, sure, I think she'd be fine. But if we're talking about, you know, in media res during that entire movie –
you know, which is the time we've seen her. I mean, she's hanging out in a bar with a bunch of people, singing with them, and singing is one of those activities. And this is frankly true of all of them, but certainly for her, singing is one of those activities that can certainly spread. And if people are singing to you, which a lot of these group numbers show, then there's real odds that you could get it. So I think Belle, she's often singing just with a single person, the Beast. So I think she would be okay. I think Elsa would probably be okay. But the ones who are singing in groups, I mean, that's one of the worst activities you can have.
Gotcha. There'd be a lot of little dwarves that were getting the COVID. Okay.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Let's go to Hithloday. Puma particle color. Whatever that is. Okay. As is widely known, the three things Wazoo fans enjoy best and are most experienced with are cheap booze in excess, cheese that comes in a dip tin, and debating the finer points of the term cooged it. This weekend provided three teachable games as to their last point, which I ask you boys, assistance in judging. So number one, did the Sun Devils coug it against the Trojans?
I think that's a couging.
I think they couged it. I think that was is that clearly it?
So which one is Clemsoning and which one is couging it? Is couging it when you're ranked and you come in and then you lose, or is couging it where you snatch defeat from the jaws of victory?
I thought it was the latter.
Okay. Clemsoning's done the other one where you come in ranked and then you blow it in a game where you otherwise should have won.
I believe so.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's the only one of these that's cooging it. So the Bruins did not coug it against the Buffs, and the Beavs did not coug it against the Cougs.
Yeah, the Beavs didn't coug. I mean, the Cougs just won that game. And UCLA, I mean, the Buffs just won that game. But I would say that
the Buffs were just simply better, which is something that you might have been able to predict before the game.
Yeah. But yeah, so I would say with the Sun Devils, even though you would say USC is a better team, the Sun Devils had that game and they should have won it. And they found defeat when victory was all around them.
Right. All right. This is from John and Bram. Pandemic. Dear Ryan and Dave, Saturday was fantastic. Terry Bradshaw and the gang hyping up the day's action on Fox. Clay Helton's magical run continues with his situational mastery on full display in front of an empty Coliseum. UCLA coming up just short of an amazing comeback, but proves they belong on the field with Colorado. Clemson goes to Notre Dame with their Heisman favorite quarterback out with COVID-19, but don't worry, he still made the trip and will be on the sideline. Meanwhile, in Berkeley and Salt Lake City, games were canceled due to a player testing positive. An empty Autzen Stadium at night is clearly established as one of the most depressing places to play a college football game. Notre Dame pulls off the upset, and the thousands of students who stopped social distancing in the stands around the third quarter all storm the field. The only thing that would have made that look worse is if they had all arrived for the game on motorcycles. Which leads me to my question. What the heck is going on here? Why is college football being played? This is nuts. And I can't wait for next week's games. John and Brea.
Well done.
Yes, exactly, John. Why is it being played? This is nuts. And yes, we cannot wait for next week's games.
Is it one of those things where, like, you talked about your friends jump off a bridge and would you too? But it's sort of like, I don't know. It's like an avalanche that's going down this mountain and. You know, most everyone's on it somehow. Like you're rolling down the hill and like, oh, they're rolling down the hill. I'll roll down the hill. Everyone's sort of going. And then you sort of look around like, what are we doing here? You know,
it's all very stupid. It's all extremely dumb.
But I do love watching it.
I love it so much. God, how I love it so.
Yeah. All right. Questions. This is from Oliver. He says, gentlemen, I took a few months off from the podcast after my inner Dave took over and convinced me there wouldn't be a football season. Thankfully, I purged those horrible thoughts from my system and we are back. Technically, we're only 67% back, but who is counting? Given the untimely passing of the amazing Alex Trebek, I figured I'd send you guys some Jeopardy-style questions about our beloved conference as a tribute. It's important to note for the Washington State, Arizona State, and Oregon fans who might be listening, Jeopardy is a game show where contestants who read books without pictures in them are tested about their knowledge of various subjects. You probably know it as an annoying show that came on between Judge Judy and The Bachelor in Paradise. So he was taking a shot at Washington State, Arizona State, and Oregon fans. Very nice. Usually it's like Wheel of Fortune next to that, right? I think it usually is.
Yeah.
Okay, so the answers I don't know how. Okay, so we have to scroll down. Okay.
For $200.
$200. The university received the most. This university received the most admissions applications in the world last year.
I know the answer to that one.
UCLA. It is.
All right. We'll alternate. I'll ask you that one.
Okay.
Are you looking at the answers?
I haven't yet. No.
Okay. For $400. This university is the only one in the conference that permanently houses live bears on campus.
Jesus. What would that, I mean, I don't think it would also be UCLA. It's got to be remote. It's got to be like a remote one, like a Utah or a Corvallis or a Pullman.
You got to make a pick.
I'll go Utah, I guess.
Okay. You want to ask me the next one?
Yeah. This university offers the only bachelor's degree in law in the country.
That feels like an Arizona thing to do.
Okay.
For $800, these four universities are in the top 50 universities worldwide for having the most affiliated Nobel laureates.
Four universities. So that's, you have to name four. Okay. What you gotta are
name the, you got to name the good universities in the league. The four good ones.
I'll do the California schools. What are Cal, Stanford, USC, UCLA?
the four good ones.
What'd I say? Cal, Stanford, USC, and UCLA.
But you got to name the four good ones in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I just gotcha.
No. But you're missing one.
What am I missing? Because
you're naming one that's not good.
Oh, well, we'll see. For 1,000, this university named one of its dining halls after a famous cannibal.
Okay. That's got to be Donner Party, right? Ooh. They came over the Rockies, so it's either Utah or Colorado. I'm going to go Colorado.
Okay. Let's look down.
All right. So for 200, it was UCLA with receiving the most admissions applications in the world last year. For 400... the only one housing live bears, you said Utah, it was Washington State. For 600, the university offers the only bachelor's degree in law in the country. It was indeed Arizona.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Good job.
And for $800, the four universities in the top 50 universities worldwide from the most affiliated Nobel laureates. Cal, Stanford, and UCLA, you had correct. And then Washington. Because that's USC is not one of the best four.
Well, they said Arizona, Colorado, and USC are ranked between 50 and 100. So they were up there, too.
Yeah.
So I got three of the top seven, four of the top seven.
And the dining hall after the famous cannibal was indeed Colorado. So I got all three of mine correct.
That's pretty good. But not one bad. Of them, I had to name four. Jeez.
One was a pure guess, like the bachelor's degree in law. Like I knew the famous cannibal had to be probably Donner, and it had to be one of the first, the two in the Rockies. But. Yeah. Bachelor's degree in law. Hell yeah, Arizona.
Pretty good. Yeah. And he said, fire Larry Scott into the sun, Oliver. P.S. Larry Scott's professional tennis record was 1-18.
Yep.
Nice.
All right. This is from Dan. Colorado versus UCLA. Hey, Ryan and Dave. While I have not always agreed with your assessments of the Pac-12 teams and their state of being, I really enjoy listening to Pac-12 coverage in the podcast while I'm at work at the fire station or mowing the lawn, since the Pac-12 network doesn't cover the conference anymore. A couple of questions. First, I had a chance to watch the CU-UCLA game last Saturday and found it troubling reading reactions of UCLA fans and analysts like yourself giving little to no credit for what the Buffs were able to do on offense, which was move the ball at will, compiling 525 yards of offense while still leaving 12 points by my estimates on the field. Everything I saw basically said the Buffs were still horrible and the loss that UCLA suffered was due to an inept coach and horrid recruiting. Doesn't CU deserve at the minimum a big chunk of the credit manhandling the trenches and running will against that defense? So I'll answer that one first. Yeah, totally. You got to understand, like, our perspective on it is kind of what I said earlier. Coming at it from UCLA's third year under Chip Kelly, it's just, it's disastrous that it's in this state where it, and this is, I'm not trying to take anything away from Colorado. It's just UCLA in third year under Chip Kelly still being in a position where all it can do is maybe play an even game against a team that everyone was expecting to be in a complete rebuild this year, is it's a disaster. So that's where the focus is if you're going to read it from any kind of UCLA analyst perspective. Because the whole thing for UCLA this offseason was that they were going to revamp the defense they were bringing in this guy from Navy who was going to, you know, install this 4-2-5 nickel defense that was going to, you know, be gangbusters or whatever. And it turns out that, no, it's just piss again. Like, it's – and that's not to take anything away from Buffalo from the Buffs, because they made it look like piss. Some offenses maybe wouldn't have been able to. But that still has to be the narrative about UCLA this year so far. And if you're reading from a UCLA perspective, that's going to be it, especially in the opener when we don't have any context. We'll know a lot more about Colorado once they played a few games. But the thing we know is that UCLA's defense did not suddenly become good. That's the thing we know definitively now. And that was the expectation on UCLA's end. And then schematically, Colorado was lost on defense in the second half, and UCLA was able to identify that and exploit it. But the damage was done, and the Buffs dominated in most statistical categories. Don't they deserve something? Last, when will the leadership pull the plug on Champagne Larry? I thought it would have been done by now with how poorly he has managed the conference. The network and only looked after his own interests.
Thanks, yeah, I don't know. Thanks, Dan. Food. We're hoping. We got to give Colorado a lot of credit. I mean, with the defense bringing a lot of stars back, I thought they played well. You know, they gave some points up at the end there, but the offense was way better. You know, having an inexperienced quarterback who played safety last year, you know, completing some passes, running all over the UCLA defense, that, you know, you give the Buffs a lot of credit, because that was not easy the way they had to prepare with no spring ball. And, you know, you get Carl Durrell coming in and doesn't even know players that, you know, a few months ago didn't know all the players. And now, you know, they're winning a game right out of the gate. That was impressive. And for Larry Scott, I mean, his contract's up 2022. So I think sometime after, you know, probably in 2021, we're going to hear something about either, like, I don't think they're going to fire him. I think it's going to be more of a, they'll agree to part ways. They'll let him, you know, exit on his own terms. But they need someone in there to negotiate the new contract. And I think people realize that at this point. Let's go to spring ball. Casey from Tacoma. I don't have Twitter, so I can only imagine David's splendor of enjoyment knowing both teams with first-year coaches and no spring ball winning this weekend. As a Cougs fan, pie-in-the-sky aspirations. If the Cougs win out, they have arguably the most difficult schedule of any Pac-12 team. Do you think they have an argument to make the college football playoff? Here's to hoping an Ewok slaps the shit out of Chip Kelly, and go Cougs. Casey from Tacoma.
Go ahead.
I think they would. I mean, the crossover game is, if you're trying to make the college football playoff, you'd rather have a really good crossover game. Because if you win, say USC is undefeated, that's just, I mean, you need as many feathers in your cap as possible. And if your crossover game's the bottom team from the other conference, that's not going to help. So yeah, I think their schedule is tough enough that if they run the table and they look good doing it, which means, you know, winning by more than 10 points against Oregon State, you know, why not? It's, if they get to play all their games and all that too. I mean, but there's enough chaos in the rest of the country that that's possible.
Oh, I would go a step further. I think any Pac-12 team that wins undefeated and plays all of its games this year is going to the playoff. There's already been, I mean, the Big 12 is basically decimated. They're not getting a team in. The SEC, whatever, they'll get one. ACC gets one. And then Big Ten gets one, but I think that's still, again, going back to my like theory from months ago, I think this is one year where they're going to be predisposed to try to be fair and just kind of even it out and not have like three teams from a single league in there if they can. So a situation where an undefeated Pac-12 team plays all seven games and emerges undefeated, which again, I don't think is likely this year because I don't think all the games are going to be played. But if that happens, if Washington State is 7-0, yeah, they're getting in. Hell yeah.
I like it. Well, there's some group of five teams that are undefeated. Cincinnati, BYU. Notre Dame winning, you know, the ACC could have an argument for two. The SEC could with Florida. So, yeah, we'll see. But I think you got to be impressive, though. And it's going to take some chaos, and we're getting some chaos. So that's a good thing.
Yep. All right, this is from Eric in Philadelphia. Berkeley health officials, based on the way the local health authorities are treating COVID cases and contact tracing at Cal, did the Pac-12 schedule makers likely give Oregon another open week right before the UW game? Cue conspiracy theories from Husky fans. Keep up the good work, and all hail Baby Yoda.
Nice. Yeah, so if you're looking at Washington – no, wait. So that Washington played – was supposed to play Cal this weekend – so what was he saying?
He's Oregon. Staying because Cal has Oregon has Cal the week before.
Oh, Oregon has Cal. Okay, yeah. Okay, so the Oregon Washington game. Yeah, Oregon has Cal. Okay, I got you. I was looking at the Washington schedule. So, I don't think that helps. Oregon. I don't think if you're trying to make the college football playoff, you don't want an open week before. I mean, you want to play everyone, and you have to have an opportunity to beat them. So, yeah, that's tough. But I wouldn't say that's the schedule makers doing. But man, that's you need it. Like, that's the problem. Like, if Oregon wants to make it or Washington State wants to make it, when they play Cal and it, the game doesn't happen, it's a lot harder to go. You know, 7-0 looks a lot better than 6-0. You want to get as many games as possible, so that would be a tough one.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that's all our questions, huh?
It was beautiful.
Good stuff.
We did them all. We managed it. With 2 minutes to spare, Ryan. With 2 minutes to spare.
I know. I got to get on the road. But we'll, we'll hopefully all enjoy a fun weekend of college football. I'm hoping that it happens. We don't know if it will, but we're hoping it does. We're crossing our fingers. At the end of the day, okay, before we go into this, any teams, are they going to get the games canceled this weekend? Are all six going to play? What do you think?
There are absolutely going to be some cancellations. I would predict at least one, which is the Utah-UCLA game, and I wouldn't be shocked again if Cal is canceled. Wow. And who knows? Maybe there's some wild card. So I would say my guess, my gut instinct, is that most four games are played.
All right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say all six are played. They're going to play
them all.
Look
at you. Just a bright-eyed optimist.
I'm going to be optimistic about this. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. I am Ryan Abraham. He is David Woods. We are the Podcast of Champions. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.